listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything.
All right, everybody, this is The Brian Callen Show. The BCS, I couldn't think of a better name for that. And I have author of the Better Baby Book and the man who created the website, the Bulletproof Executive. You've heard Joe Rogan talk about him a lot, and Joe Rogan is a huge practitioner of your methods, my friend. I got Dave Asprey in the house, and I'm glad you're here, man. I really enjoyed your book. I read the other cookbook. What's that called?
The Upgraded Chef.
Yeah, The Upgraded Chef. And, you know, I had Tim Ferriss on. He did the 4-Hour Chef, which is a different emphasis on why you cook and stuff. It's great. But it's funny because I've had some people on here like Tim Ferriss and the guys who wrote the Engineering the Alpha and other people. And I've read a lot of the guys you cite in the book, whether it's Gary Taub or, you know, there are a lot of different people. And it seems to me that there is a... You know, there is a general consensus that what we've been taught in the past, which is essentially, and came around in the probably 60s, 70s, a low-fat, high-carb, high-fiber diet is good for you. And you guys are coming along looking at all the science and the measurable science. And in fact, grass-fed meats, eggs... whole raw milk, unpasteurized. Those are the things you should be spending most of your time on. You've taken it, it seems to me, a step further because you have, quote unquote, biohacked the brain and the body. And I think that's interesting because that is the wave of the future. As we learn more about the genome and learn more about how really to figure out this machine of information, because that's what it is. It's just constant information. We're realizing that food is and should be treated just like a drug, because calories have different hormonal responses depending on how many you eat, what you eat, when you eat them, what combinations you put them in. And it seems like a lot of people get so overwhelmed with this stuff. There's just so much information out there. And you've taken it to the nth level, it seems. You biohacked your body and your mind, right?
Pretty much. The problem is, in my mid-20s, I weighed 300 pounds, and I started getting cognitive dysfunction. And I'm a kind of high-performance guy, Ivy League MBA and senior executive and venture capital and all this and that.
And I should say you're in shape. I mean, you look like a swimmer. You look like an athlete. You're a big guy. I mean, there's nothing fat on you. I mean, it's always refreshing when you see a guy who is talking about health, and they actually look the part, you know. It's a very important thing.
I have maybe my number one piece of advice is don't trust a fat nutritionist.
Yeah, and you see it all the time, man.
Yeah. And you know what they say? They say, you know, my advice is good, I just can't follow it. I cheat.
And well, how about doctors? I mean, how many doctors have I been to that are giving me a checkup and they look terrible? You start talking to them about foods that produce insulin. What simple carbs do to your cholesterol? They don't even know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, they don't teach it in medical school. And I'll tell you, if I break my leg, I know I'm going to a doctor because they know what they're doing. And I'm married to a doctor. Now, I had to teach her how to eat. She's going to kill me for saying that. But it's true. When I met her, she was pretty good compared to the average, you know, doctor who basically says food doesn't really have any effect. It's something else. You know, she's definitely on that spectrum. And there's all kinds of A4M, integrative wellness, functional medicine doctors, guys who work with me on that nonprofit that I run, the Silicon Valley Health Institute. These guys totally know the stuff. They live and breathe it, and they're doing some of the cutting-edge research. But, you know, the average person who gets out of med school has been taught that that's a total quackery. So they have to go through cognitive dissonance and realize that, okay, my medical degree is a very valuable thing, and I learned amazing things there, but there's another side that wasn't taught.
And that's what's amazing.
Yeah.
If you actually look, I think they get their sort of rudimentary nutritional notion, the pyramid and stuff. I think they take I don't know how many hours, but it's the first year, first semester in medical school. it's just treated like it's a basic.
And it's like 2 hours. They get 2 hours of lectures on nutrition.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Western medicine. I always say to people, if you have a problem with Western medicine, I think you'd have a very different, you'd be singing a very different tone if you needed anesthesia or antibiotics when you get staph from rolling around on a mat, et cetera,
yeah.
MRIs, x-rays. We've come a long way. God bless Western medicine, but you're right. What's fascinating to me is we live in the most developed country in the world, or one of them, and I travel this country a lot as a comic, and people simply have zero idea how to eat. And by the way, our food industry is not doing us any favors. You know, we're able to feed a lot of people quickly and efficiently and nutritiously to an extent, but it's not optimal. It's far from it.
Big food is killing a lot of people. I was just on a cruise. I was on a low-carb cruise. It was on a carnival cruise ship.
You were on a low-carb cruise? That's hilarious.
Well, I was giving a lecture. This is Jimmy Moore's Live and Love Eat a Low-Carb. So I was giving a big talk about the Bulletproof Diet. And I figured it'd be cool to hang out with some of the other authors. The Kaltons were there, who just came out with their grocery positioning system book, which is really cool, the Rich Food, Poor Food guys. And even Rob Wolf was going to go on this. So it was a good chance to just hang out and get some quiet time with some of the other guys who do what I do. And I kind of assumed that the cruise would have food. And I got in there. It was like a prison ship. I will never go on a Carnival cruise again.
Yeah.
Everything had gluten in it. Everything was like pre-fried. And there was one thing, the Mongolian barbecue thing. If you went there and you told them, look, don't spray whatever that mystery oil is and don't add those other mystery chemicals to it. Like, here's the vegetables and give me some of that salmon and just cook it right there.
Well, judging from what I've read with your stuff, you are a big proponent of ingesting the right oils, and you have to be very careful of the wrong oils. And it sounds
Think of it like this. 1 gram of fish oil does what to you? Oh, that's a normal dose of fish oil for anti-inflammation. What do you think 1 gram of crap oil does to you?
Mm.
The exact opposite. Mm. So you have to be down to that level. That's those spray oils that have 0 grams of fat, even though they're all fat, they have 0 grams of fat in them because the rules in the U.S. say that if it's less than X amount of calories or less than X amount of oil, they can just round it to zero. So they're putting basically totally chemically processed oils in there, exposing them to high heat so smoke comes off, and then saying it has no fat in it. But what you're getting is highly oxidized, unstable oils. And when you eat those, your body's like, what do I do? Well, you trigger inflammation in the brain, in the skin. And if you try and build cell membranes out of those, you're going to be whacked. Like, your cell membranes will not be stable if you have broken oils in them.
Well, you know, you just said that you had to teach your wife how to eat. And I love asking this question. If, you know, a guy who knows as much about nutrition on such a sort of a, I guess, a biological level, you know, what would you, if I made you the food czar of America, what are the things? Give me the five things you'd have Americans eat for breakfast, or what are the things you'd have us do? What are the things you'd have us change?
We would be feeding our cows what cows are supposed to
eat. They're ruminants, which means they'd be eating grass, not grains.
Exactly. So we'd have to fix that. And once you fix that,
is that possible?
It's not only possible. All we have to do is eliminate golf. If we just took those golf courses.
Oh, boy.
And we put cows on them. As a matter of fact, you can still golf. You just have to step around the
paddies. Step around the cows, man. put helmets on the cows and we'll be fine, man.
Where I used to golf in Silicon Valley, you know, we had geese. You always like line drives. Yeah. You can smack a goose that you never get one because they move.
Right.
But
there's a huge amount of grazing land in this country.
It's giant.
In fact, I think we only live on 6 or 7% of the land mass. And I think 30 to 40% is grazing land anyway.
Here's the dirty thing that happened over the last 100 years, actually maybe more than 100 now. We used to have these roaming buffalo everywhere, and we went and we shot them all. Mm-hmm. And we had a problem with desertification ever since. You know, we had the Dust Bowl and all this. We just now figured out, there's a great TED talk about it, that you need hooved animals to have healthy soil. When there are no animals plowing up the soil with their feet, the water doesn't penetrate.
And shitting in it and creating all those microbes.
It's like mobile composting. So I hate to say this, if we want to avoid the next Dust Bowl and we want to be able to feed everyone, we have to have grass-fed cows that walk around and keep the soil healthy. So even if you're, say, a vegan and you're trying to be ethical to support the planet, you
support grass-fed beef.
You got to eat the cows, or maybe just buy the meat and throw it away if you can't stomach it.
But this is what's so interesting. Grass-fed beef costs more. It's really hard to get. You got to go to Whole Foods. All of us, most people, you go to very fancy steak restaurants, and they advertise this is Nebraska corn-fed, 100% corn-fed beef. and it's very marbled and it's very tasty. And you know, these animals are fed on feedlots. Their liver's abscessed because they can't produce the they can't digest the corn. So then they pump them full of antibiotics so that they don't, their livers don't abscess, so that they can stay alive a little longer. You get them very fat. You put an estrogen pump behind their ear. It makes them even heavier. I mean, it's amazing how, and it's a very strong lobby, by the way.
Do you know about feed efficiency in agriculture?
No.
This is an awesome thing. I wish actually Gary Tobbs had written about this because it's right up his alley. And when you're a rancher, you can buy the stuff, those estrogen pumps you talked about. The most common one is called Zearalenone. It's an extract of a mold toxin. It's a mycotoxin called Zearalenone. So they're like, oh, we'll just take this, a super potent estrogen, and we'll make a waxy tablet, stick it in the cow's ear. It'll melt in through the membrane in their ear. And then the cow can get fat on 30% less calories.
Wow.
Now, if you believe that calories make you fat, you tell me how there can be ads in agricultural magazines for this product that does that if calories count.
That's
they do
amazing.
Not count.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. It's, you know, I so appreciate someone like you who's done the research on where our food comes from. Nobody does that. That's very interesting to me. You know, Michael Pollan deserves a big, you know, thank you for that too. But, okay, so let's keep going. So you would, I love the ecological notion. I mean, it takes something like 12 barrels of oil because we use so much synthetic fertilizer to grow all this corn. You've got huge corn lobbies. You've got the companies like Archer Daniel Midland's with a lot of power and stuff who basically corn refiners. There's just a lot of money in corn.
Oh, yeah.
And high fructose corn syrup, if you guys want to watch a very good lecture by Robert Lustig, he talks about the dangers of it and stuff like that. And he's a professor of endocrinology and pediatrics at Cornell University. But
I believe he's lectured at the nonprofit I run as well, the
Silicon
Valley Health Institute. Yeah, we've got like 10 years of lectures available for free. I'm not collecting email or anything. Like, this is just a free community resource.
By the way, while we're talking, tell us where to go.
SVHI, SiliconValleyHealthInstitute.com.
Okay.
You can go there. Literally, just two-hour lectures from leaders in the field, no cost, no marketing, just free.
And then you can also go to the bulletproofexec.com.
Yeah, that's where people can get all of my writing and stuff.
Great website. And the book, again, the Better Baby book. I got two kids, so I love this. I'm all over this book. So now let's keep going. So you would take these hoofed animals that we eat, and you would feed them what they're supposed to eat, what they're biologically programmed to eat, which is grass. They're ruminants.
Yep.
Okay. So let's keep going.
So we do that, and then we increase the amount of butter in the diet. You don't have to keep killing the animals and eating them. You can actually have them make a lot of butter for you. And
the French, Gérard Depardieu, he gave a speech. He was a little drunk. My friend was there. And he gave a speech to all these like kind of business people, and it was kind of a weird impromptu thing. And he said, the secret of life is to cook with butter. And that's basically the gist of his entire, you know, speech.
I love it, and I hate to say it, but it might be right.
Yeah.
There's a reason that the reason Bulletproof Coffee exists is that I was at really high altitude in Tibet. I was going on Mount Kailash, which is the headwaters of the Indus and Ganges. So I'm at somewhere around 18,000 feet. And if you've ever been at high altitude or done mountaineering kind of stuff like that, you usually feel nauseous and dizzy, it's not pleasant.
Yeah, I haven't, but I'm going, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love the story, dude. Just the way you started the story is exactly how you pick up a girl in a bar. I was at high altitude in Tibet at the mouth of the Ganges, where the Ganges begins. It's a sacred river of the Indians, and it's fucking beautiful.
I mean, it's like, I really did it. And
I'm going to re-listen to this and steal that whole bit.
It's yours, man.
Thank you. So anyway.
And so I'm there, and there's these Tibetans, these like little short Tibetans, and they keep giving me yak butter tea. And the first time I tried it, I wanted to just spew. It tasted like feta melted. It was gross because it was rancid.
Yeah.
But when I got into the backcountry, they were giving me this like fresh stuff, and I drink it, and it was like just a shot of adrenaline or something. And I literally felt better at that altitude than I had in years. I was just like rocking it.
Wow.
So I got back to the U.S. I'm like, I'm going to make some butter tea. And it was disgusting and wrong. So being a biohacker...
It was disgusting and wrong. By the way, yaks are, you know, these huge, shaggy animals.
Yeah.
You know, basically the cows of the Himalayas, right? I mean, they can...
They're so ginormous. All the ones you see in photos are only half yak. Like, the real yaks are, like, almost like dinosaurs.
They do. They look like woolly mammoths, giant, you know... Yeah. All right. So go on.
So anyhow, to the Tibetans who meditate all the time, time and spend like 10,000 years figuring out how the brain works as best they could without MRI scanners and all the cool Western med stuff that we use in biohacking.
Yeah.
These guys are drinking this stuff, and it's like a core part of their spirituality and a part of their diet. Like, their breakfast is basically yak butter tea mixed with ground up barley, because nothing grows there. You can like look for 100 miles. There's not a tree. Wow. There's no agriculture.
Wow.
They're all nomadic. Like, it's
so
phenomenal.
Their breakfast is yak butter tea with ground up barley.
Yeah, and it's called sampa, and they just like pour the butter, like super rich butter tea in there, and they mix it with their fingers and just eat it. I try that, man. I'm not meant to be eating ground barley. Like, yeah, I'll just take the straight tea.
Yeah. It's a rough one.
But man, these guys are way tougher than I ever am. I'll tell you a story in a minute. But what I found out about the stuff when I got back was that you have to have the right butter. And up there, yaks eat what yaks eat or they die. They don't do well at low altitude. They don't do well on non-yak diets where they eat lichen and stuff.
Damn non-yak diet. Ugh,
can't it's terrible.
Them, can't feed them beef.
I can tell you yak pizza was pretty good. But when you go through this whole process, I just realized, okay, I can do this. But even with tea, it doesn't have the same effect. When I did it with the upgraded coffee, the stuff that ended up becoming the coffee, like I've worked on that process for years, there's a huge difference. You have the MCT oil. It goes beyond what the yak butter tea does, but it's the same general idea. They drink that stuff for meditation. They drink it for cognitive function and for keeping their biology running. So when you take those ancient techniques, you apply something that they could never get, like MCT oil. They might have got coconut oil, but it's only like 15% the kind of MCTs we're talking about. So
explain that to us, because I just took my MCT today, just because you say it's what I should do. And but explain to me what it does, because I used to do, because of Tim Ferriss, you know, I would do a tablespoon of raw coconut oil, you know, which I guess is good for you because it's got the oleic acid, I think, and some other stuff. I don't know, but what is MCT? Yep.
So MCT, by the way, I love that Tim Ferriss helped to popularize that. Like, Tim's an awesome guy.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's done amazing things for biohacking, just for getting people to see that they're in charge of their bodies.
Yeah.
So coconut oil is 60 to 65% medium chain triglycerides. So you have saturated fats, you have unsaturated fats. The medium chain triglycerides are saturated fats, but they aren't as long a chain of carbon as the normal fats that we normally have, like in butter. So they're treated differently by the body. The liver doesn't have to process them in order for them to be used as energy. They basically
are triglycerides, basically fatty acids.
Just fatty acids.
And your body uses those for energy.
It can use them for energy. It can use them to store energy, or it can use them as energy themselves.
Yes, fatty acids can be converted into fat that the cell stores. And when you are running low on energy, they will convert that fat to free fatty, to triglycerides. And is it glycerides and triglycerides?
Yes.
Okay.
But the kind that are medium chain don't do that. They get burned more like a sugar. They go in and they turn into something called beta hydroxytoluene. You don't have to remember that word.
I just appreciate that you actually know all the words and the details. It's the greatest.
Well, I only know this because there's only three steps to making it into energy. And from there, it goes to coenzyme A and it goes right into the Krebs cycle. Okay. That's the biohacker's short circuit path to great energy. And this is why you feel so much energy if you try fasting, because you go into a state of ketosis, and ketones provide an alternate energy source for the body. Here's how to think about this. Imagine that you're a hybrid car. So you can either run on gas or you can run on electricity. Well, you might actually get a lot more distance out of running on gas sometimes, but other times it's convenient for a short burst to run on electricity. Mm-hmm. Well, we're kind of like that. You look at the sugar as electricity, and the gas is longer running energy. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a Prius and you floor it, the engine comes on and you pull from the batteries.
Right.
So, although I have to say, I had a Prius. When you floored it, really not much happened.
I just finished driving my Prius for 3 years. Joe Rogan never stopped making fun of me.
The worst car ever.
He found it so offensive that I drove a Prius.
I sold it and bought a Hummer, and I put the hybrid Synergy Drive plaque from the Prius on the back of the Hummer.
That's hilarious. By the way, what a lot of people don't realize is actually a Hummer in some ways has a smaller carbon footprint than a Prius because of that nickel battery that they have to make in China and bunker fuel it all the way over to the United States. So in fact, they've done that. You know, if you actually look at the fine print, it's amazing how a Hummer has a lower carbon footprint than a Prius. I just drove it because I'm lazy. I don't want to get out of the car.
Put an EMF meter in the back seat of a Prius and then tell me if you want to put your kids on top of that.
What's an EMF meter?
An electromagnetic frequency meter. So if you believe that electromagnetic frequencies affect biology, oh, by the way, we've known this for 100 years that they affect biology, and it's undeniable.
Is that right?
Yeah. You can say that, oh, this frequency is not harmful or this one is, but you can't say they don't have an effect. And the truth of the matter is we haven't researched a lot of the effects very well. But guys like Robert O. Becker and guys like that who wrote Electromagnetism and Life, there's pretty good evidence that there are effects from these things. I have a video of me using pulsed electromagnetic fields on my head. And, like, you can see muscles jump inside the body just from magnetic fields.
Wow. And is there memory loss and things like that they talk about? We don't know.
There potentially could be. All I'm saying is there's an effect. I don't think we know enough to say everything about it. But I can say that it is a safe choice to minimize exposure.
So we get a lot of EMF from...
hybrid cars.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I am glad you said that. I was about to buy the new the Lexus hybrid, and now I'm not going to.
It might be okay, but buy a $50 EMF meter and turn it to do it. When you turn it on, if huge amounts of EMF happen in the back seat, you could either drive a car without EMF in the back seat or one with it, and they'll both be approximately the same environmental footprint.
Okay.
So, like I would drive a hybrid rental, I think, but I'm just not going to choose to do it every day.
Yeah. I got you. I like hearing
balance risks.
Things you learn from Dave Asprey, ladies and gentlemen. Things you learn. So keep going. Now, MCT. We're talking about MCT.
Here we go. So MCT goes in like a hybrid car, and it lets you either choose gas or electricity. I look at burning fat metabolism as like having gasoline. It lets you go for very long distances. You can go for as long as you need. And if you need a short burst of glucose or sugar, you can get it. What we've done with our food supply and big food is we've basically told everyone, oh, you forgot there was a gas engine in your Prius. All there is batteries. So you got to go 20 miles, plug in, and recharge. That would be snacking.
That's right.
Having carbs for breakfast.
Yeah, spike your glucose. You eat a lot of glucose, and
It's inconvenient to charge your car every 20 miles, but you can get wherever you want to go.
You had something interesting I thought that was interesting. You said 50 to 60% of your diet should be fat.
I go about 70, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
This goes against what Barry Spears says, who wrote The Zone, and you always hear 30% fat, 30% protein.
Barry Spears is a genius. Like this guy is really smart. He knows all about eicosanoids and all this.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though, and I heard this from some insiders in the food industry. The reason we have 40-30-30, which is basically the zone diet, 40% carbs, 30% fat, 30% protein, is because that's what you can fit in a food bar. And let me tell you, I've been trying to formulate a 70% fat food bar that won't melt in your hands. Uh-huh. You know what it is? It's called chocolate. That's your 70% fat food bar, and that's what I'm formulating. I've got my chocolate. I've literally got sample bars ready to go.
I like it. You see what happens when you listen to the Brian Callen Show? It's okay to eat chocolate, motherfuckers. All right? Chocolate. You heard it first here. This podcast breaks new ground and dimensions. All right, sorry. So obviously, we're going to get back to the question. And we go all over the place, and that's what we do. But you would have people eat.
Let's finish MCT oil.
Let's finish that.
All right. So when you eat medium-chain triglyceride oil, about half a coconut is MCT, but there's four kinds of MCTs, and only two of them give you the real big effects. Mm. So there's four different kinds, and you see the coconut oil says, I have full of MCTs. Well, technically, only 15% of coconut oil are the two lengths that do the most. These are called C8 and C10. And we've got this regular upgraded MCT oil that I make, which is extra purified, 100% pure, and you use that stuff in just even a teaspoon. And I'd take a lot more than that because my body's used to it, but it gives you this huge burst because now you've turned on your gas engine and you've still got your glucose going at the same time. So your brain can use ketones. Probably for about 60% of your neurons' energy needs can come just from ketones, according to some studies, and the rest of it can come from sugar. Mm. If you're running on just sugar and you add MCT back in, oh my God, it's like you woke up. In fact, it also turns off cravings. I got an email from a 60-year-old trainer. This is a great email. Her name was Linda. I won't say her last name. And she said, for 20 years, I've been telling my clients, don't eat sugar. And I'd go in the back room and I would eat some sugar because I couldn't stop my cravings.
Yeah.
3 days of Bulletproof Coffee. Bulletproof Coffee is really simple. It's upgraded beans that are free of toxins and they're tested to have a different cognitive effect than normal coffee.
And free of mold.
Free of mold, exactly.
Okay. And you can get it at bulletproofexec.com.
Yes,
Thank
you can.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
I've been drinking it. It's good.
I brought it back for you.
You get some good beans.
Thanks, man. Sourcing those was such a pain. It took years to find people who do every step just right. But it's real. And you go from there and you do those beans plus butter, grass-fed butter. I use Kerrygold, the most widely available.
As do I.
The vast majority of it's grass-fed anyway. There's a little bit of other feed that sneaks in, but that's true of almost all butter.
Right.
And then you add this MCT oil. You blend that stuff up. And she said in 3 days of that recipe that her food cravings went away and that she lost a bunch of weight.
Listen, I know that firsthand.
Oh, you felt it, yeah.
I've been doing that for, yes. I mean, there's no question that when you up your fat, your good fats, you stop eating simple carbohydrates, your body, you do not have cravings. You do not have cravings for sugar. You just don't.
It's kind of weird, but you look at, like, the average person, you put a plate of cookies in front of them, and, like, the Labrador inside their head's like, cookies,
yeah.
Like, those are better than cat poop. I'll eat those, too.
That's right.
And, like, they start focusing on it, just like a dog focuses on, like, some kind of food, like a piece of popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I gotta have it, gotta have it. And they use their willpower. They just burn up all this willpower trying to not eat
That's
this
right.
thing because their body's starving. But it's funny because food has no power over me like that. I look at it, I'm like...
I'm the same way.
Yeah, it's just food.
I always say that. I think that you've got to figure out a way to biohack your body so you don't have those cravings. That's a huge, huge part of it.
Yeah,
you know?
Using your willpower to resist cravings. All those people who write about how to deny yourself.
No.
Screw denying yourself. Feed yourself.
Well,
you
first
do that
of all,
right.
All human beings are always moving toward pleasure and away from pain. The way to deal with addiction, the way to deal with cravings is you have to have a mechanism, something, a good craving.
Yeah.
A positive substitute for that other thing, and they're out there, especially with food. I always say to people, forget trying to be disciplined. I got to work out. How many times have you heard people, I got to get back into shape and stuff? No. That has nothing to do with it, man. You've got to start to feel the difference between when you're in shape and when you feel the difference between when you're in shape and not in shape. You will start to move toward that.
Yeah.
It starts with food.
It is pain avoidance. When you get sick enough, this is what happened to me, right? I've had this amazing career. I made $6 million when I was 26. Of course, the company went bankrupt a couple years later. Oops.
Yeah.
But it was nice to, have a brief spurt of wealth at a young age because that let me biohack myself the way I did. And it's just amazing because I was so sick, I had to do it. But most of the time, people wait till they're like 60 and they start to really feel aging. And then it takes many years and a lot of work to come back from that.
Yeah.
If you just did it right in the first place, oh my God, it's so much easier and it doesn't take any effort. You just have to learn what to do.
But, the other thing that people get overwhelmed with, and we'll talk about this, is, and that's why I want to simplify things for people because, man, there's a lot of information out there. I mean, now you got to, what do I do? Do I do MCT oil? I mean, I can drink my Bulletproof coffee. I put my, I've got my MCT. Do you put an MCT oil in the Bulletproof coffee?
Yeah, you want to do that because when you blend it up like that, it emulsifies it. It actually improves the mouth feel a little bit.
Okay.
Like when you drink butter coffee,
I've had it with
amazing.
Joe Rogan, and I love it, dude.
Yeah,
we make our Bulletproof coffee every time we do, a podcast. So there's no question. You could be accused in some ways of reductionist thinking. In other words, a lot of people say it's better just to eat the whole fruit, the whole coconut to get all of it instead of reducing it to its good components, quote unquote. Kind of like vitamin C. Don't take ascorbic acid, eat the whole orange kind of a notion.
Well, here's the thing. You don't really know how much vitamin C is in your orange. If it wasn't freshly picked, there's probably none.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I've heard that the vitamin C when in orange juice basically goes away.
It goes away within a day or two of picking, so
wow.
You're not really getting it. It's marketing. And here's the thing. You should get your nutrition from food only if you get your toxins from Mother Nature.
Hmm.
And I hate to tell you, but we're sitting here in your great recording studio, but what's this carpet made out of? Does it have flame retardant in it? What are we breathing?
Yeah.
Did you fill up your car with gas? So we're getting all kinds of weird crap in our bodies that our biology wasn't made for.
That's right.
And part of being a biohacker, I am not afraid of Western medicine. Yes, will I take smart drugs? You bet your ass I take smart drugs.
Hmm.
Why do I do it? Because it makes me work better and because it decreases my risk of certain age-related mental conditions.
What do you think of smart – I assume you're talking about nootropics and things
like that? Yeah, nootropics. I've been on them for 15 years.
Really?
I was on ABC Nightline for taking Provigil and CNN.
What's Provigil?
Provigil is one of, I would say, the more aggressive smart drugs out there. It's used for narcolepsy. It's also used by the military to let pilots stay up for 40 hours at a time.
So what do you take? What smart drugs do you take?
Right now, I'm not taking it.
Mm.
I'm not taking that one, but I've used it almost every day for 8 years.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a huge part of my performance, but now that I've got like Bulletproof coffee and the other stuff in my stack, I can take or leave it. If I'm jet lagged really bad, I might take it a little bit. But after I was on Joe Rogan in November, a lot of people were like, well, you didn't tell us about it. I'm like, guys, I was on Nightline and CNN. I feel like I've disclosed that one enough. We just talked about other stuff. But then people said, well, all your performance comes from that, nothing else. So I quit using it.
Oh.
Just to see what would happen. So yeah. I've been off of it since
November. That's a stupid comment anyway. Your performance comes from hard work and thinking about this stuff and having a passion for health and changing your own body and saving your own life. I mean, that's a little annoying.
I like to think that too. But at the same time, hey, maybe I could be deceiving myself. Maybe I'm just a pro-vigil addict, right? So I'm like, I'll quit it. And you feel a little difference at first when I went off of it and I went back on it. And I would say it's probably 5, maybe 10% performance boost. Mm. But I'm already performing at such good levels with the Bulletproof diet, with Bulletproof coffee.
So keep going. Let's keep going with the diet.
Then aniracetam. This is critical stuff. Aniracetam is an actual pharmaceutical substance, and it's not really recognized in the U.S. You can buy it on Amazon and places like that. And aniracetam increases your memory I.O. This is the ability to get stuff in and out of your memory, and it protects your brain cells in certain conditions, like when you don't have enough oxygen in your brain, which may or may not happen to you at any one time. And over long periods of time, it also is likely to make your neurons live longer. Mm. So there's less oxidative damage to them. So I look at this as something that will make me live longer, most likely, or at least live better for the amount of time I live. Helps me think faster, and it has a slight stress-lowering effect. And the major side effect? It amplifies caffeine. Terrible. Now,
I love caffeine.
The other one that I like is actually Alpha Brain. And I started carrying that stuff on Upgraded Self, and certainly they have it at Onnit. And Onnit also carries Bulletproof Coffee because they go well together. And Alpha Brain is something that increases acetylcholine levels in the brain. Some people have excessively high acetylcholine like I do, so I need to take one of the racetams like paracetam or aniracetam. But for the vast majority of people, they don't have enough acetylcholine. So when they take this stuff, this Alpha Brain, they end up getting huge performance benefits. So I've, for years, been a fan of the different stacks of choline and all you can do, and I thought they put together a pretty good formula there.
In Alpha Brain?
Yeah.
Because I got some of that. Yeah. I get it for free from Joe.
Nice. Oh, no, Alpha Brain
I'm so lucky. I get all this stuff for free. I haven't taken any of it because I just don't. I'm always like, you know, I don't know this. I don't know who makes it. You know, I'm always worried about that kind of stuff.
I've met Aubrey, the CEO there. I before I did any business with those guys, like we sat down and broke bread. And he's a gentleman and just a really cool dude. So they passed the bulletproof
test. I put you
on
a desert island.
Yeah.
I give you 7 foods to eat the rest of your life. You get water. Mm-hmm. You get water. And I'm going to give you your Bulletproof coffee.
Well, I don't need anything else.
Yeah, I need nothing else. What are they?
Well, I would say beef and eggs.
Grass-fed beef.
Yeah.
Organic eggs.
You got that for sure. And let's see, 7 other foods. You're going to want a source of starch on this desert island.
Yep.
I would probably pick white rice.
White rice, not brown rice.
Not brown rice, yeah.
See, this is where we get all crazy now. What the fuck is going on? All right.
Throughout history, the rich people ate white rice and the poor people ate brown rice. This is not because the poor people had more resources or were smarter than the rich people. Not to say rich people are smarter than poor people. I'm just saying that it's not because one is smarter than the other. It's because they couldn't afford the white rice. Because if you ask an old Indian grandmother right now, she'll laugh and she'll say, white rice is better. And the reason that they use white rice is that the outer layer of brown rice that has all the vitamins that we get all excited about also has a bunch of anti-nutrients in it that inhibit your absorption of minerals and irritate the lining of the gut. Brown rice doesn't digest as well as white rice. Most starch sources you can get come with a protective mechanism in place. Because think about this. Nature loves starch. If you have starch, mold is going to eat it, bacteria is going to eat it, bugs are going to eat it, and animals are going to eat it. Right? This happens to anything made out of starch because it's an easy energy source. So what do you do if you're a plant and you want to have the next generation of plants? You evolve pesticides to put on your starch so things won't eat it, including people.
Right.
Well, the brown part of the brown rice protects the inside of the white rice. So now what we did, we said, oh, look, fiber and vitamins. Let's ignore the poison that's in there and we'll just get fiber and vitamins and then we'll fart a lot.
It's hilarious. I can't take it.
Brown rice is evil. All right.
Jesus. Dave Asprey saying brown rice is evil and chocolate is good. This podcast just keeps getting more and more revolutionary. Okay, so we got white rice, beef, eggs. Keep going.
You know, I do like some vegetables in there. So
thank you.
I'd probably pick, I like broccoli. That would work. Maybe Brussels sprouts are pretty good.
Okay.
Something
broccoli
like that.
Broccoli and Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
Get your greens.
Right. And then, I mean, if we're talking survival on desert island, I don't like liver. Liver's disgusting, actually.
Yeah.
But I would want liver because it makes you live a long time and has pretty much all the vitamins you need in it.
Liver.
So
doesn't it have a lot of toxins, too, because your body...
If it's grass-fed, it's good.
Okay.
If it's pesticide, normal beef or chicken liver, no way. But grass-fed beef liver, like, I've frozen it and taken little pieces to swallow them. I've cooked it, too. But even if I cook it as best as I know how, it's still unpleasant but bearable.
Yeah.
So I take desiccated.
Well, I've eaten a lot. I've eaten raw deer liver, and I've eaten cooked deer liver after I shot it, and it was delicious.
Fresh deer liver might be great. I haven't tried that, but I've done raw sheep liver, like right after it was slaughtered. I tried to eat it, and it was gross, so I made a smoothie out of it, and that was even worse. So raw liver smoothie.
I had raw liver. I didn't have raw liver when I did Meat Eater. I had raw liver once in Virginia and with my Taekwondo teacher, who is a Korean guy, and they would do it. They would cut it up,
like the thin
and they would
sliced.
Put some vodka on it, and then they would eat it. It's pretty wild.
Oh, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. And when you cut liver, when it's raw like that, it's crunchy. It's crunchy. It's not soft. You actually, it's really weird. Okay, so you take some. So the beef and the eggs aren't enough. You need liver as well. You got your Brussels sprouts. I love how you guys treat, like Gary Taub, you guys treat vegetables kind of like, yeah, I guess I'd have some greens in there. They're always secondary, which is so flies in the face of everything. You know, I like to juice. Like, I'll juice kale and spinach and all that. Is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
You are going to die. So I have a blog post.
I'm going to die. I'm juicing organic fucking greens with apple and ginger and kale. And is this bad for me?
Here's the deal. The reason I say you're going to die is actually just from laughing, not from kale.
Oh, okay.
But today, the it's just a blog post, should be up about how to upgrade your kale smoothie. So the kale is good stuff. Like, there's all kinds of good stuff in it. The problem is it has really strong anti-nutrients. Think about it. It's a big floppy leaf.
Yeah.
Everything on earth would come eat that big floppy leaf if it didn't have some way to protect itself. It does. It's called oxalic acid. It's the same toxin that Aspergillus fungus makes to protect itself, and it's what your kidney stones are made out of.
Ah!
And get this, the variety of kale that you eat has very different levels of these nutrients in it. You want to eat dinosaur kale in your smoothie, not the curly kale. The curly kale is like three times more.
What the fuck is dinosaur kale?
It's the stuff that's like bigger, kind of floppy leaves with little like dinosaur looking skin versus the little ridged ones.
Yeah.
And then here's how to really like get the most nutrients from your kale.
Cook it.
Yeah. Cook it and drain the water.
Yeah.
That'll take out about 2/3 of this oxalic acid.
They say cooking vegetables breaks down the fiber.
Yeah.
It's a word for it. And you should do that, like spinach, saute spinach, because you digest it way better.
Never eat raw spinach and raw kale.
Okay.
I'll just be really straightforward there. And
how about parsley? How about raw parsley?
A little bit's okay, but parsley is also one of the very high oxalate vegetables.
Wow.
So if you do like
apples,
a lot of
apples?
Stuff, raw apples are fine.
Okay. A little too much sugar maybe if you have a lot of them.
Yeah, but you know.
So no more juicing for me.
No, not necessarily. You can juice, but at a minimum, you might want to consider throw some parsley in there, throw some cilantro in there, use cucumbers.
Okay.
Right, there's lots of things you can juice, but those big greens like that, and I don't want to like fly in the face. I was a raw vegan. I have the champion juicer. Like, I've juiced the crap out of things, right? The problem is that over time, you may even notice this. After you have spinach, you feel that feeling in your mouth.
Yeah.
These are the acids that are in the spinach self-defense mechanisms. So historically, we never ate raw spinach.
You know what I love about this? My mother has been saying everything you've been saying forever. Because she's Italian, man.
Yeah.
Because they would cook their Swiss chard and stuff. My mother would see me eating all these nuts and all these beans, like all this raw shit and juicing, and she's like, I don't think that's good for you.
Yeah.
She goes, I think plants have natural sort of repellents.
They do.
And you're juicing all this stuff. And I'm like, you don't know anything. I feel amazing. I got to go take a nap.
So here's the weird thing. So I call it the vegan trap. And this happened to me. I was a hardcore raw vegan. 2 hours a day in the kitchen, you know, cashews, soaked, sprouted pâtés, all that stuff. Like, I could write a cookbook on that. And you feel awesome for the first 6 weeks, maybe the first 3 months.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting all this other standard American diet, antibiotic-fed meat and bad fats. So you're eating clean.
Yeah.
But after this period of time when you convinced yourself, you've got a new habit, this is how you eat, 6 weeks is the habit forming window, then you go, all right, this is what I do. And then you start getting these nagging health problems, and like your joints are sore, and now you're allergic to something you weren't allergic to before. And pretty soon, like, I got way more sensitive to some food. Some of the allergies I have now came about from being a raw vegan. And on my forums, I have like dozens of people who went raw vegan and got profoundly ill.
Never seen a healthy raw vegan. Never.
I don't believe it's possible.
They're not. I just haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I don't see any athletes who are raw vegans. It's not what I'm interested in.
It's the anti-nutrient poison thing.
Never done it in my life.
So I added raw meat in after about 5 months. I'm like, I'm not doing well, man. I gotta something's not right. So I'll stick to raw. I was doing the raw liver. I did raw
beef. By the way, I have to say, when I do carpaccio, when I do steak tartare, when I do raw meat, that I'll put like cayenne pepper and some lemon. Dude, I feel so good.
It's amazing.
I mean, that's so easy to digest for me. Raw meat sounds crazy, but it's so good.
In fact, I'll tell you this. If you're an environmental vegan, you're doing this for the planet, eat only 2 ounces of raw meat, because it'll fill you up more than a 10-ounce steak will, and make it grass-fed, and you'll actually be helping the soil of the planet to survive, and you'll have the kind of energy like you never had as a raw vegan. It is amazing what a little bit of raw steak does.
I always tell that. A friend of mine is a vegan and doesn't look good, doesn't have, and has health problems, anemic, and I'm like, you have a religion here.
Yeah.
That's bad for you.
Yeah.
It's bad for you. And I just totally disagree with it. We have evolved. We started as hunter-gatherers. We are biologically programmed to absorb animal protein. Okay. Yeah. And that's how you stay healthy. I don't care what anybody says.
Well,
so
check out the flip side, though, before you go into that. I also did something last year. I went on, when I was doing my 4,000-calorie-a-day kind of experiment, for a while, it was three months, I did one serving of green vegetables a day, and that was it. The rest was meat and fat, and like 70% fat. And it turns out that wasn't very good for me either. I developed a couple new food allergies that way. Because what happens is, if you don't get enough starch, and I don't mean green vegetables. I don't think you're going to get enough from green vegetables. You need a little bit of real starch. It could just be once a week. Sweet potatoes, yams, and white rice are the ones on the Bulletproof Diet that I've just put over there. But paleo guys mostly agree. Like, that's not rocket science. It's just that you don't want to get all those anti-nutrients.
So at Chipotle, no beans.
I would say no beans. No way. Get a little bit of the white rice. And when you go there, the trick is the guacamole is like the main food there. Just okay. Like, I want a plate of guacamole and a tiny bit of rice, maybe.
And the pork.
Is the pork pastured properly? Yeah. Okay. I haven't looked. Yeah, the pork's probably good.
They try to. All right.
So we do that, but on this diet, when I was doing that, I ended up getting really dry eyes and really dry sinuses, and my sleep went like away. I would wake up like 9 times a night according to my little sleep monitor, and I didn't know that I was waking up, and I would feel like a zombie in the morning. And what happened is, I ran out of raw materials to make tears and to make mucus. So the lining of your stomach is mucus to protect your stomach from the stomach acid. So I got leaky gut, not from eating grains, but from not eating any starch at all for a prolonged period of time. So that let a couple of my favorite foods through my leaky gut, and my immune system got turned on to them. I'm like, that's really unfortunate. So I'm working on turning that off.
Yeah.
Give me time.
Because there are some cultures that are almost strictly carnivorous. The Masai Mara, they drink basically 7 quarts of high-fat milk a day, almost. And they'll tap a vein in their goat and drink the blood, and then they eat meat. And the Somalis are very carnivorous. I mean, a lot of that part of Africa. Mm-hmm. And even most of Africa, certainly sub-Saharan Africa, where you can't grow a lot of grasses and millets and barleys and the things that you could in the Fertile Crescent, it's changing now. But the indigenous populations were primarily, and by the way, so were the Native Americans.
Yeah.
I mean, they were almost exclusively carnivorous, and they didn't die of scurvy and things like that because they were eating a lot of that stuff raw or almost raw.
It's interesting. Those guys, when they drink milk, they're getting lactose so they can make the secretions that they need to be able to make. What I was doing was like zero lactose, zero carbs of any sort other than that little bit of broccoli, which is essentially no real carbs because you need the carbs to digest it. So, yeah, that's not a good thing. I was trying to replicate like what they would have done in, in Eskimos and people like that who really do eat like zero carbs of any sort. It was not the right diet for me, that's for sure. And
what do you think of raw dairy?
I think if you tolerate it, raw dairy is a great thing. I've done raw dairy, and I still get like a sinus response from raw dairy. A lot of people do.
Depending on if you can handle it, yeah.
Yeah. And
they say goat milk and goat products that are raw are easier for whatever reason to digest.
There's another thing about dairy. One of the reasons I recommend grass-fed butter in Bulletproof Coffee is this short-chain fatty acid called butyric acid. Yeah, it sounds like butter because that's where they named it from. It's about 4% in cow's milk and about 5% in goat's milk. And it's what gives goat milk that goaty kind of cheesy flavor. This stuff goes into the brain and it turns off inflammation. It also heals the lining of the gut. And the only way you can get this is from dairy, or you can get some of it if you have the right bacteria in your gut, which many people don't. And there's no way to know what you have growing in there. But some bacteria with some foods will make short-chain fatty acids. But the more short-chain fatty acid you have, the better your gut is. So I get people who are drinking this recipe, and they're like, wow, my gut feels a lot better than it did before. Why is that? It's because, well, you got this healing short-chain fatty acid in the gut that you couldn't have got otherwise. And it just came from butter, like the core food.
And you like caffeine. It's a brain stimulant.
You know, I like caffeine in moderation. It turns out my beans have like between a third and half the caffeine of a typical dark roast from a large coffee house. So they're not excessively caffeinated, but the parts of coffee that are most interesting to me are the diterpenes. And these are called cafestol and cawahal. And we know from some of the biochemical research what cafestol and cawahal do to inflammation neurologically. So everyone has some amount of inflammation, and if you can do something to turn that down a little bit, it increases your performance.
Well, look, go back to the gut and acidophilus and the different things that you find in yogurt. I mean, a lot of like the blue zones and a lot of cultures where people live a long time, and I'm thinking of the Middle East, and I'm thinking of certainly the Mediterranean, whether it's Greece or parts of Italy, southern Italy especially. But you know what? Even in the north, I mean, yogurt has always been a staple. Obviously, I think you're probably going to say raw yogurt grass-fed from grass-fed cows, but yogurt has always been something, and is a part of China where they eat a lot of yogurt, where they live forever. So yogurt has been something that's been in the human food chain for many, many years, and seems to be a staple for a lot of people that live a long time, or at least a part of their diet.
You know, if yogurt was just one thing, I would totally agree with you. Here's the problem. We changed the fungal biome of the planet. So like, you and I have probiotics in our gut. Well, the planet has probiotics in the soil. About 30 years ago, DuPont came through, and they made this really amazing fungicide called Benomil. Benomil kills 98% of fungus in soil, so then your plants don't spoil. The only problem is the other 2% get like X-Men level mutation skills. So they start mutating like crazy. So for 30 years, every 20 minutes, the fungus has been growing new skills in the yeast. And, of course, they swap these things. They're called plasmids, and they can swap them with bacteria as well. So what we've done is we've changed the very small microbes that make yogurt. So unless you know what's making your yogurt, you don't know what it's going to do. And here's something that no one talks about. I believe that most yogurt makes you fat. Now, that's a big accusation, and here's why. Fat people have a lot of a type of bacteria called Firmicutes, and Lactobacillus is one of the most popular ones. They have that growing in their gut.
Which you find in yogurt.
Which you find in yogurt. And there's another kind called Bacterioides. This is something that you cannot buy. And lean people have lots of Bacterioides and less Firmicutes. Fat people have lots of Firmicutes and very few Bacterioides. Now, if you take the bacteria from a fat person, put it in a thin person, they get fat. Take the bacteria from a fat person, put them in a thin person, or whatever, vice versa.
Yeah.
So,
well, they're actually doing that.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, the fecal transplant.
There's a process where it's called fecal transplant. They actually take shit from a thin person, and they put it in a fat person's intestine.
Yeah.
It's basically that simple.
And it works.
It works.
Yeah, and you can do it at home, I hear.
Yeah, it changes. Yeah, I'm going to shit in your ass. And you're going to get skinny. That's just the weirdest thing. Like, what the fuck is that? That's the funny thing about real life. Like that's the thing about, if you came, before they did this, if you came to somebody and say, bro, you're fat, let me shit in your ass. I'll take a funnel, I'll take a shit in your ass, and I promise you, you'll get skinny. People would be like, this guy is talking about shitting in my ass. He's obviously a freak. No, I'm trying to help you.
And you know what? It works. Now they're trying to, like, medicalize it. Like, well, we'll take the extract of poop. And it's like,
yeah. You of know, course, what a surprise.
It's a $2,000 shit in your ass.
Yeah, what a process, surprise. You can see it on the shelf. Stick this in your ass, and it'll probably work.
You know, I think it has more of a likelihood of working than, you know, gastric bypass surgery, which is so terribly harmful.
It's awful. But there are so many things here, Dave, and it's really refreshing to hear somebody who you've clearly done your research, and more importantly, you are, you remembered it all. I mean, so you've been doing this forever. Do you ever get yourself confused? I mean, what? And I know you have this in the book, and that's why people should read it, because you break it down. And this is great that you got something for children, which I think is really well, we really need. But, you know, what is a typical day for you? What do you eat? You take, we know you take nootropics and things like that. We know you take, you know, you've got this up, you've got a new thing here on the website. It's upgraded brain octane oil, 18 times stronger than coconut oil for maximum cognitive function. You've got a new protein powder, upgraded collagen protein. You were explaining to me what that was. They usually throw the collagen away, or they use it for gelatins and things after they it just spoils. But this is stuff that they keep cooled, and they actually turn into a protein that you can absorb better. I mean, you've got a lot of these products, and you're speaking in all these, like, sort of, you know, I mean, it's a lot to take in, because, you know, your yogurt would be good, but guess what? You know, the soil's not ready. And so it's easy to get confused here. So yep. Simplify some shit for us so we can come out of this podcast healthier. We already know white rice, not brown, grass-fed beef, eggs. I've heard that many times. I mean, Tim Ferriss said, if you want to, you know, I would have everybody eat lentils, which you would disagree with, sautéed spinach, and four whole eggs. So everybody has their point of view.
I want to look at Tim Ferriss's kidneys. If he eats that much spinach.
Yeah.
Like, I want to do an ultrasound.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right.
We never finished the kale thing, by the way. You got to take some calcium, or at least drink Pellegrino if you're going to have kale, especially raw kale.
Okay.
Because you want the calcium to bind with the oxalic acid in your stomach. Otherwise, if that oxalic acid enters your body, it'll bind with calcium somewhere in your body, and you can get oxalic acid crystals in various places. And that's tied to a condition called vulvodynia, painful sex in women, as well as muscle weakness, irritation of the lining of the throat and the eyes. Like, it's an unpleasant thing, and specifically kidney stones.
Wow.
So.
Wow, man. Wow. Really, you're doing a real service with all this research, man.
It's there to be a service. I have a full-time job. Like this is
I mean,
there.
This is on the website.
Yeah, and it's free. Like, no one told me this stuff. I was 300 pounds. My brain was turning off. I was sick all the time. I had arthritis in my knees when I was 14. So, like, why didn't I have access to all this stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's what usually happens. You when something painful happens to you, you can either get fatter or change the world,
yeah,
which sounds like you're trying to do.
Well, let's talk about a great day. Like, yeah. What do you do? All right, you wake up. You're not going to be dying for hunger like you probably are, or dying of hunger when you wake up, because you're well-fueled. But so what do you have? You have bulletproof coffee. Two normal-sized cups of coffee with, for me, I'll do a tablespoon or two. I like this new upgraded brain oil because it's three times stronger than normal MCT. But I use normal MCT, too. I'll do, like, two brain and one MCT. And this gives me a little bit more of the mental focus. I don't need as much of the metabolic effects, like the weight loss things that happen with MCT oil, because I'm in pretty good shape already. So I do that, and I put in 2 to 4 tablespoons of butter, depending on how much energy I want. And I blend it really, really well in a BlendTec blender. And then, in fact, Onnit sells really good BlendTec blenders now. This is, you know, the guys that we work with, Joe Rogan. And then it just poured in a cup, and it's like creamy and delicious. I'm not going to be hungry till 2. Snacks? Like, there's no snacks. I don't even worry about snacks. So around 1 or 2, like, I guess I could have some lunch. Sometimes I'll have lunch. Sometimes I'll skip it. But usually I'll have lunch. Yeah.
Okay.
You only need one meal a day if your metabolism is running well. Mm. So I'll do this, but it's more common to have 2. Lunch is usually a hunk of meat if I have time for that. If not, it takes about 5 minutes to steam some vegetables, toss the vegetables in a blender, add more butter, add more MCT, and then I add upgraded collagen protein, which is basically like what you'd get if you were to make a bone broth. It's all the collagen there, but this collagen has not been damaged by being boiled in an acidic environment for a long amount of time, which changes the peptide form. So this is basically the most absorbable collagen that I could figure out how to make. So we do that, and then you've got a soup. You can drink it. This is one of the recipes from Upgraded Chef. Any kind of vegetables, and I'm talking like a whole head of cauliflower here. Like, it just fits in, you know, an insulated cup, and you can drink it while you're at the computer, while you're doing whatever you're going to do. And then I'm not hungry till dinner. Dinner around 6. What's dinner? Piece of steak, piece of wild salmon. None of that Norwegian salmon that's like killing fish all over the place. The farm salmon from Norway is particularly evil. I just wrote about that.
I read that article.
And then some more vegetables, and sometimes, and by then, I've had a day with, I did bulletproof intermittent fasting, where I didn't actually eat anything except fat. When you eat only fat with no protein in the morning, your body still thinks you're fasting, so you get all the focus of a fast and all the weight loss effects of fasting, but you don't get the low energy from fasting because you had enough fat. So now the whole day, I felt great. I've had 0 carbs, and I've had moderate protein, not excessive protein. And then for dinner, I had some more protein, moderate protein, not a ton of protein, not too little either. And at dinner, I may or may not have carbs. You can have up to 75 or 100 grams of carbs and still be low carb. So I might have some rice with dinner.
Hmm.
And I want to stay in ketosis some of the time and be out of ketosis some of the time.
Yeah, because the guys on Engineering the Alpha had something to say about carbo loading at night. They'll eat pasta 3 hours before they go to bed.
Yeah.
They eat white rice before they go to bed. I mean, they were big fans of essentially carbo loading before they went to bed because it actually will make you thinner.
You know, I had Kiefer on the show, the guy who writes a lot about carb backloading. And I think that on a day when you work out, that works pretty well.
And I was going to say that your diet, you know, your day there, if you're doing jiu-jitsu and you're lifting weights, you're doing a lot of CrossFit, you're going to need more protein.
You need more protein if you're working out. But, like, I do high-intensity interval kind of stuff on a whole-body vibration plate, the Bulletproof Vibe. I mean, you can see how I look, right? This is 45 minutes a month of exercise.
Hmm.
So if I was going to be exercising a lot more, I would up my protein intake, but I wouldn't rely on protein as fuel. Protein is a building block.
Okay.
You see a lot of...
Fat is a fuel.
Fat's a fuel and starch is a fuel.
Okay.
And if you try and rely on protein as a fuel, you can turn protein into carbs, but it's metabolically expensive and it taxes the crap out of your liver. So these like high protein diets, especially high protein, low fat diets... People get fat on those. I lost my first 50 pounds on a high-protein, low-fat diet, and then I got stuck, and I had to learn all this other stuff because, and this is what I heard on the Low Carb Cruise extensively, I can't get past the second half. It's because protein is inflammatory. Cysteine and methionine, the two main amino acids in whey protein, are inflammatory, which is why I say whey protein is amazing for you. Take 2 tablespoons, but don't eat it 6 times a day.
Yeah, because it can actually spike your insulin.
It spikes your insulin and it causes inflammation from those excessive amino acids. The lowest inflammation protein that I know of is collagen because it's mostly glycine, which doesn't have the methionine and the cysteine in it. So, you know, I wish it was simpler than this. So the bottom line is
because I can hear a lot of people saying, look, you know, I'm just going to eat well and not worry about all these
I'll do something products. In moderation. So here's the thing. If you're going to do any whey protein, do it once a day. Tim Ferriss is a fan of protein in the morning.
Mm.
And you're within 30 minutes of waking up. Try it. Experiment. If that works for you, and for women, actually, that works much better than for men. I'm talking about the man diet. It's not uncommon for women to actually add collagen to Bulletproof Coffee or to have a protein source along with their Bulletproof Coffee.
How about a piece of sprouted toast?
In the morning?
Yeah.
You set yourself up to be hungry, need snacks, and be focusing on food all day long.
Really?
I would never eat carbs in the morning. It's
really?
Just not worth it. Yep.
Fats, proteins.
That's not true. If I was going to eat a carb in the morning, like say a piece of toast, nah, I wouldn't do the oats. I would do like a rice-based toast or mochi is my favorite. You just put it in a waffle iron and it puffs up. Then I would just put like a whole, like half a stick of Kerrygold on there to slow down the insulin rush. And then I'm not going to have any impact at all from it. But if I was to eat like, you know, a thin layer of butter on a piece of gluten-free toast, I'd be hungry 2 hours later and, you know, wanting to eat everything I saw.
Right.
I never have food cravings. I don't even remember what they're
like.
But
whole eggs are fine.
Whole eggs are great, yeah.
All right. You can do a little vegetable. You can eat an apple maybe with some almond butter on it?
You could, yeah. You're still going to get the fruit effect. Actually, not almonds, but apples tend to make people really hungry an hour or two later. You ever notice that? You eat a green apple on an empty stomach and see what happens.
Yeah.
You'll be like wanting to like pull off someone's arm and eat it
within
an hour or two. But as long as you don't get that effect from apples, I've given that to my kids.
Blueberries, maybe?
Blueberries are good. If you're going to eat any fruit in the morning, they're a nice fruit for it. Raspberries are a little bit better because they're lower in sugar.
Okay.
You want to keep your fructose down.
Yes.
Here's the thing. Fruit today is mostly just sugar. It's a wet bag of sugar with a little bit of vitamin in it.
I say that to people.
Yeah.
It's true, man. You don't – I mean, I'm sorry, but you don't – for me, I'm always paying attention to my energy levels.
Yeah, so you get – and you look really fit and healthy.
I'm a good-looking guy. Let's be honest.
I'm feeling – never mind.
Wait a minute. This is getting crazy. We got to wrap this up because we're at an hour. I could talk to you forever about
this is great
this
fun,
stuff.
Man.
I could talk to you forever. This is the kind of stuff – there's so many damn questions. But we always keep it to about an hour. And I know you got to go do my best friend Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yep.
And I thank you for reaching out, by the way. This has been great. I'm going to go and pore over all your stuff now. I already have, but I can't wait to, you know, reread the Better Baby book. You can get that. It's written by Lana Asprey, who is your wife, and she's an MD.
Yep.
And Dave, who obviously isn't an MD, but has been knows a lot more about nutrition and stuff than these people, because he's done all this experimenting on himself and talked to scientists. And it's so obvious from just the way you talk that you've done this stuff, man. I mean, you've really lived it, and you continue to. And I think it's very impressive that you put so much of this on the internet for free. you know, and now you have these products to sell. But, you know, I know from Rogan, who does his research and uses your stuff all the time, that this stuff has got to work. So, I, you know, so far I'm loving my MCT oil.
Well, we're going to get you the upgraded Brain Octane.
Yep, you can get it on the website, too.
Yeah,
upgraded Brain Octane and the upgraded collagen protein from pasture-raised happy cows. They're always fucking smiling. God damn those hoofed assholes. This is Brian Callen Show. Dave Asprey, thank you very much.
Brian, thanks, man.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.